All right, well, let's open up the show, Nicholas.
Yeah.
Throw my head up.
And there he got whiplash.
Welcome to the Nerdentials Podcast, starring your hosts, Joe Tweedy, Matthew Johnson, Nick Thomas, and Lynn Dudgeon.
All right, well, on that note, guys, welcome to Nerdentials, your weekly dose of the nerdy essentials covering film, TV, video games, and comic books. I'm your host, Joe Tweeden, and co-hosting with me tonight, the Lone Ranger down south, the grand comic book guru himself, the Nick Thomas.
Hi-ho, Silver.
Hey, Nick, how is it going this week?
Good. Good. My diet kind of suffered this whole thing because Thanksgiving.
I think it failed a lot of us this week, if we're being honest.
It's really hard to stay away from carbs on Thanksgiving.
Or by the time you hear this, it'll have been barely a week since it happened. But nonetheless, it happened. Well, mine did the same. I was not watching what I ate, the turkey, the side dishes, the stuffing, all of it was calling to me, and I answered quite vigorously. Anywho, that being said, guys, welcome to this week's TV Talk. And, you know, we're trying something different this week. I didn't mention it in the previous episode, but we're just kind of going to see how things play out. We've got enough news and content that we're going to kind of, at least for right now, this week, we're going to see how it goes. We're splitting the week up into individual episodes. And so far, our movie talk, Movie Matters, went really well earlier this week. It was an hour-plus conversation about various things. And today we have a handful of things to discuss in the realm of TV. So, Nick, are you ready to dive in?
Shame you bald and call me Sally. Let's do it.
I was going to say, for all you podcasters out there, Nick was nodding his head yes prior to his eloquent description for the night. All right, guys, let's jump into our news segment for TV Talk. A little gem we like to call the Weekly Dose. Hey guys, welcome to the Weekly Dose in TV Talk. Today, not a whole lot of things that we're tracking, but a real big one was the announcements of... we're a little behind on this, we understand, but Bob Iger came out, or at least the Disney company came out during their fiscal year calls and made the official announcement for what the new streaming service they've been working on is going to be called. And there were rumors it was going to be called Disney Play, but officially it has been announced. It is now being called Disney Plus. And a price point has come with that. They've officially announced. They originally said it was going to be cheaper than Netflix, and as it currently stands, it still is cheaper than Netflix, coming in at $9.99. for your basic month-to-month service. Now, Netflix...
$1 cheaper.
Yep, not much cheaper. Netflix recently bumped their prices up a little bit. And if you guys go the four-screen 4K route, which is their premium package, that's closer to $15 a month. So, for all intents and purposes, Disney is the cheapest of the big heads if you're comparing it to Amazon Prime Video or Hulu or Netflix. Disney Plus is the cheapest of all of those currently for what it's offering. And the bigger news coming out of this are some of the live action shows that are going to be exclusive to this streaming service. Now, the nerd crew here at Nerdentials hasn't openly discussed a whole lot of what's been coming out news-wise for the streaming service, but a lot of us are aware of the things coming out, so we're going to kind of share some of those today if you guys are still in the dark or kind of not in the know. We're going to kind of give you guys a quick heads up of what's going on with that. So, first off, first thing we've heard, during the fourth quarter of 2018 financial results, Bob Iger, the CEO of Disney, was announcing a few things, and right here it says, and I'll quote, coming off of the WaltDisneyCompany.com website, the article states here that Iger also announced that Lucasfilm is in development on a second Star Wars live-action series. So, but let me pause real quick just to backtrack. Something we haven't talked about yet that a lot of people are aware of, but maybe our listeners are not, is they've already started working on a live-action series called The Mandalorian. And for you geeks that are not fully versed in Star Wars, you should be if you're not. Mandalorian is the race of people related to Boba Fett. Boba Fett being the infamous bounty hunter from the classic trilogy of Star Wars. Now, his father, Jango Fett, was introduced in the prequel trilogy, episodes 1 through 3, where we saw the rise and fall of Anakin Skywalker becoming Darth Vader. Jango Fett, the actor himself, is known for a handful of things. One obscure reference I personally am aware of is that he played the Green Lantern alien character known as Abin Sur, who is the ring bearer that gave his ring, or connected with Hal Jordan, the current Green Lantern, at least as far as like comic book lore is concerned. But in the movie with Ryan Reynolds, he played that character. Nick, are you familiar with anything else that he's done aside from Jango Fett and Abin Sur, the alien?
He's going to be Arthur Curry's father.
Oh, in the Aquaman movie, huh?
Yeah.
He hasn't done a lot of huge things. The things we've mentioned already are kind of the big roles he's been in. But so the main thing is Mandalorian or Mandaloria. The show sounds like what we've read is going to kind of take place on the home world of his people and where he kind of originated from. It's going to kind of be about the bounty hunters, and he's reprising his role in it. We know it's going to have a decent budget. Disney is really pouring a lot of money into their original content for this. We're going to kind of see how that show turns out. We don't know much more beyond that. That's all we really know right now as far as The Mandalorian is concerned. Now, Disney has recently announced that a second live-action series is being produced for the Disney Plus service. It will go into production next year, 2019. The series will follow the adventures of rebel spy Cassian Andor during the formative years of the rebellion and prior to the events of Rogue One, A Star Wars Story. For any of you guys that recall the previous film before Episode 8, actor Diego Luna will reprise his role of Andor, which he originated in the 2016 film. Going back to the Star quote, he says, quote, going back to the Star Wars universe is very special for me. I have so many memories of the great work we did together and the relationships I made throughout the journey We have a fantastic adventure ahead of us, and this new exciting format will give us the chance to explore this character more deeply. The rousing spry thriller will explore tales filled with espionage and daring missions to restore hope to a galaxy in the grip of a ruthless empire. Now, a release date for the series will be announced at a later date. They don't have that yet, but they will be working on it early 2019. Anyway, so that's it as far as that goes. So what's kind of cool about this is Disney is this article doesn't state it, but we do know that Disney is casting movie actors, like the actors that were in these previous films, to come back and reprise their roles in an episodic nature, which is kind of cool in the sense that we're going to get kind of like the classic 6 to 8 episode run that HBO and Netflix have been doing, where we're going to get kind of a deeper look at specific characters. And I'm not like, I mean, I'm just kind of, for these particular Star Wars shows, I'm just hyped to, Nick, personally, I'm just hyped to see our first live action shows of Star Wars in the form of TV shows, because it's never happened before. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on that?
I remember hearing about the one they were going to do with the people that made Game of Thrones.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Live action one there.
The writers from that? Yeah.
Yeah, I've been hyped since that one, so.
D.B. Weiss, and I forget the other guy, but the writers for Game of Thrones on HBO, yeah. They were, that's right, they were hired on to do some live-action Disney stuff. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I'm kind of like, here's the thing, like, it's funny because, and I mentioned this to Lynn earlier, that, gosh, like 6 months ago, we had heard news that Disney was making a streaming service, and it was at a time when everyone was making streaming services, like trying to separate their content and get their bang for buck by making their stuff exclusive to that service. The one thing I can say coming out of that is that some of the bigger companies that are doing this realize that pulling their content from other services like Netflix and Hulu isn't the only way they're going to get subscribers. They're realizing that to succeed like Amazon is starting to, and Netflix has been doing for a while, is making original freaking content. And as of right now, I think Amazon is spending $1 or $2 billion on original content this year alone. And I think Netflix has reached upwards of $8 billion in original content going into 2019. Freaking ridiculous.
Oh yeah.
But they've, as far as the TV series go, they've been kind of proving themselves, and Disney is not stupid. They have smart people working for them. They realize that that's going to be needed. So they're putting big budgets into these Star Wars shows. And additional news on this, guys, let me jump into just what we've heard of as far as the Marvel side of this. Now, this is kind of cool. We already know that Tom Hiddleston has officially, as of last week, he was officially confirmed to be cast for a Loki miniseries from the Thor films, from the Avengers movies, Loki himself. And here's the thing, it's in development, but we have no idea what the timeline is for this, because right now, spoiler warning, skip 15 seconds if you guys don't want to hear this, Loki is dead in the MCU. And this is going to continue telling stories about the same character in the same universe. So the question is this going to be a prequel, or are we going to discover something in a few months when Avengers 4 comes out that justifies him coming back? And will we will we tell future adventures? Nick, in my opinion, I think it's going to be more prequel.
I think so too. Or
I've heard rumors it's going to be of a young Loki, but they've already cast Tom Hiddleston, so they can't de-age him that much.
Well, what they could do is there was that whole time where he was playing as Odin, telling stories and stuff, right?
Right.
So what if it's him sitting there before the whole thing where he dies, just telling his tales?
Yeah.
And it kind of has him narrate it, and then there's...
Maybe in an anthology style?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they could do that. I wouldn't be against that.
I don't think a lot of people would.
No.
I think everyone's just glad to have Loki coming back.
I don't personally get it. I mean, I think he's a beautiful human being visually, but there's a large fan base for the Tom Hiddleston crowd.
Well, he's probably one of the best villains they've had so far.
Oh, well, I know. Well, now, Nick, see, here, there you are, as authentic as you usually are with comic books and stories. I agree. Yes, like, as far as character depth, he's one of the best guys we've had. I was purely speaking from the the public audience, you know, the wider audience that doesn't necessarily follow the depth of his character. A lot of people are fans of Tom Hiddleston, the actor.
Nice.
Let alone what Marvel could do with the character in a series. Mm-hmm. I do too. I love where they took him. I love how he was always conniving, always doing stuff for the betterment of himself. I don't want to rehash the whole emotions right now as far as Infinity War. And guys, we're kind of pretty... we're pretty uncaring about spoilers when it comes to Infinity War, so I'm just giving you guys a heads up. If you haven't seen Infinity War yet, you might want to skip this episode. But
we only ever spoil Star Wars
For Lynn.
For Lynn.
Only for Lynn. I try to give you guys warnings, though. So, I am definitely excited to see what comes of a Loki miniseries. I think they've locked down 6 to 8 episodes right now, is what they're saying. And I don't have a lot of details at the moment. I don't know how into production it is or if it's started yet, but we do know that they want to get Elizabeth Olsen to reprise her role as Scarlet Witch. And
that should be good.
And we've heard that Mr. Bettany is coming back to also reprise his role as Vision. Now,
nice.
In Infinity War, we got just a small glimpse of their romantic relationship, and comic book fans should be aware that Scarlet Witch and the Vision have had past relations in the past, to the point of actually having children of their own at some point. We won't dive into that. I don't know if this miniseries is going to get anywhere close to that, but we do know that Paul Bettany has been brought back in as Vision to co-star with Elizabeth Olsen, and it appears it's going to be a bit of a action/drama series, so we're going to see a little more focus on their relationship in this. And I think it's probably going to be a prequel again, taking place before the events of Infinity War, meaning we might actually get to see that romance unfold, because story plot wise they allowed a couple years in between the previous Avengers to the current one. So that untold story of their romance hasn't been told in cinemas yet, and so that's an opportunity for the miniseries to kind of expand on that.
Yeah. I agree. Might be that, or in the comic books, after she loses Vision, that's kind of what throws her off into the kind of dark side, and she creates a whole nother universe where he's still alive.
Yeah, you've mentioned that before in our past theories when we're talking about the Infinity War and what might happen with them. Yeah. I'm very curious what direction they take. That's definitely one possibility, sir. On a side note, are those things hanging on the door behind you, is that a custom-made full sheet sleeves for them, or are you just hanging them individually?
Oh, they're in individual sleeves.
So you just lined them all up together?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I was curious if that was like some weird sleeve shelving hanging thing. Nope. You know what I mean? But that's individual cool, sleeves. Man. That's cool. All right, well, guys, that was the top of things. I had one more piece of news that I thought was fascinating. You guys can boo me if you need to, but shame on me. I'm not caught up on what the current. Oh no! I still want to bring this up just to get an opinion from you, Nick. It's kind of news that's already come and gone, and they actually did settle the case. Publicly, or the Sabrina lawsuit outside of court, they did actually settle. But I did want to bring this up, and we'll follow up on next week's episode as to what the official verdict was, or what they settled for, I should say. But in other news, guys, now I'm going to review the season in a little bit here. So we'll talk about the show in a minute. But the Netflix original series, The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, which just came out the week of Halloween, October 26th is when it launched. All 10 episodes came out. We'll talk about the show in a minute, but as far as news highlights go, the Church of Satan, or more specifically, the Satanic Temple in headlines, was suing Netflix for, here's the interesting thing, I don't know what the official number was, CNBC lists here that they were suing for $150 million, but all other sources I came across said $50 million. So somewhere between $50 and $150 million. Damn. That's a bit of a gap. They were suing Netflix and Warner Brothers, saying the companies infringed on its copyrights, violating its trademark, and caused injury to its business reputation in its... In this show, that's what Netflix did. The Satanic Temple says in the lawsuit that it has a copyright on the depiction of Baphomet used in the show. Now, those unfamiliar with this deity, Baphomet is an androgynous goat-headed deity used kind of as like the mascot for the Church of Satan out there, if you guys are unfamiliar. And I've seen the tweets, I've seen the side-by-side comparisons. I'll try to put up a photo right now here for you guys to check out of the real statue, the goat-headed statue of Baphomet, and the Chilling Adventures of Sabrina's version. And I will be honest, after looking at these two side by side, there are little differences, but it is arguable there are extreme similarities between the two. It's a goat-headed creature, kind of a human with a goat head sitting on a throne, and there are two little children looking up at the goat, at this goat-headed deity, and that's the whole ensemble of the statue. Now, Netflix and Warner Brothers, I mean, Netflix is just the distributor. Warner Brothers is, you know, the company behind the production of this show. There's ridiculous comments coming from various individuals out of the Church of Satan, if you will, and saying that they're so shocked at how careless companies like Netflix and Warner Brothers were at using their exact trademark image in the show. Here's the main thing they're complaining about. And
well, if I remember correctly, I actually read on this a little bit that there was actually two different entities. There's the Church of Satan, which actually isn't a church that actually worships or anything. It's just it's an activist group.
A religious
that
has gathering,
no religious gathering. But then the Satanic temple itself said that they were perfectly fine with them using that image because they made it their own.
Yeah. So here's the interesting thing, Nick. The original claim was that these people from the Temple of Satan were coming forward and saying that they're suing the company for imitating the copyrighted image of their statue. That seriously, honestly, guys, they came up with this statue back in 2014, 2015. It's not even biblical in age. This is only a couple years ago that they chose this statue image and this exact depiction, and they copyrighted this image. The deal is, here's the thing, is they came out and said, I know we're rambling, sorry guys. They came out and said they're upset at the depiction of evil and evil worship in the realm of witchcraft, in how the Sabrina show is depicting the existence of this statue in the School of Hidden Arts, and that the real group that uses this statue says their philosophy is that of free will, free-spirited free will, and that there nothing about their statue was meant to depict the worship, the straight physical worship of evil. And they feel like the Netflix show is using the statue in this school as a depiction of something that is to be worshipped. Now, I don't know what the official legal outcome was for this. In my opinion, I don't think... I saw the whole show. I watched all 10 episodes, and nowhere do I feel like that statue was specifically focused on as a form of worship for evil. I might be missing a line of dialogue here or there where maybe they did say something about it. But to go to the lengths that this group is to wanting to sue Warner Brothers over using this is, for me personally, extremely absurd. Because, and I just want to throw this out there, like, I'm a Bible-based Christian believer, and I don't feel like our churches get pissed off whenever Hollywood uses the cross incorrectly. You know, it's one of those things. It's hard to pinpoint the specific reason or need to do what they're doing here, but I think the general consensus is it's just absurd. And
I agree.
All I can say on the matter is that the show is fantastic, and we'll talk about it here in a minute. Here's the bottom line is they weren't just suing for the money. They wanted the money, and they were with that lawsuit, if they won it, they wanted Warner Brothers to stop the production of any future content regarding Sabrina using this statue. It's like, that's not going to happen. So they're going to figure this out or settle it one way or another, and I just saw a headline today that says that Netflix settled the dispute, which means the Temple of Satan got some kind of money for it, and they dropped the matter. So Netflix, they might stop showing the statue in the show. They might, you know, work around it, or use a different image, or they might not show it at all anymore in the future seasons, because we know right now there's 10 more episodes coming early next year, and they're already in production right now. So bottom line, they settled the case. It's no longer an issue. I knew Netflix and Warner Brothers would take care of this at some point. It is shocking that this came up at all. And again, my personal opinion, that whole idea is just absurd, that they're just trying to get money.
Yeah.
For a really stupid reason. That's my opinion. And Nick's opinion. And don't care if any of you disagree. I don't anyway. Because it is kind of silly and stupid. That was the last of the news, guys. I think we can... we're going to shift over to our TV Talks Week in Review. Here we go.
Yeah.
Blah, 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 blah. So, Nick, I've done a lot of rambling in this episode. I'm going to throw the first little Week in Review over to you if you want to kick things off.
I actually haven't watched much of it. I watched the first episode, if you're talking about the Sabrina. So we can get your opinions on it, because you've watched more of it than me.
No, I mean, I figured we'd discuss Sabrina together, but if there was any other shows you've been watching that you want to talk on first, real quick, kind of knock those out.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of Nathan Fillion. And he actually has a new show where he's decided midlife to join the police force. And it's called The Rookie. I forget who makes it, but it's actually really good. It's kind of like a police drama. Follows a set of rookie police officers starting to beat with some veteran police officers there. Some of the drama and everything that goes along with it. Everyone not wanting Nathan Fillion's character there because he's older and they're thinking he's going to get them all killed. But
how much have you seen?
Got a good amount of humor. I'm all caught up. It's actually a running season right now. So I'm on the most current episode.
So it's on ABC Tuesday nights at 10.
Mm-hmm.
All right. The series follows John Nolan, a 40-year-old man who moves from his comfortable small town life to Los Angeles to pursue his dream of being a police officer for the Los Angeles Police Department. He must navigate the dangerous, humorous, and unpredictable world of a young cop determined to make his second shot at life count. That sound right?
Yep.
Nice. So,
I thought they did a really good job on it.
A lot of secondary role actors here, but the big name obviously is Nathan Fillion.
Yeah.
And Greg Beamon is one of the directors of the number of episodes. I think he has some Star Trek credits. He was a producer on Heroes, Falling Skies, and American Gothic. Those are shows I've heard of.
Yeah, they did a good job on it. And it was nice to see him in role again. He kind of has the nice guy attitude, and he does use some of his worldly experience within the job, which is different.
Right. Nice. Yeah, so this is on ABC and it's currently airing. Do you recommend anyone give this a try?
I recommend everyone to give it a try. It's been a great show.
Well, I like Nathan Fillion, so I'm always down for checking out whatever he's got going on. Let's see. Let's jump into, how much of Sabrina have you watched, Nick?
The first episode.
Well, shit. Man, we talked about this like 2 weeks ago, bro.
We talked about it starting, yeah, and then I was going to watch it. I was trying to watch it with my wife. We didn't actually get into it.
That's okay. See, the thing is like I started it without my wife. Then a couple of her friends said she should watch it. So we both were like, all right. We started it together. I rewatched the first episode with her. We got two episodes in. Next thing you know, I can't stop. And she couldn't come back to it. Not because she didn't like it. She just lost her connection with it. For me, though, dude, holy crap. After the first episode hooked me, but after the first couple episodes, even just the first two, I'd say it just keeps pulling you in. The character development, the drama is all compelling, and the dark tone and adult nature in which they took this show was both surprising and welcoming. This is not your casual Melissa Joan Hart comedy sitcom of Sabrina the Teenage Witch. This is legitimately the chilling adventures of Sabrina. Still a teenager, though, in her own right. As the plot kicks off, I will give you guys the quick synopsis so we can just be on the same footing together. As her 16th birthday nears, Sabrina must choose between the witch world and her family and the human world of her friends. And this, of course, that's the general premise, and it is based off the Archie comics. As far as the overall concept, I know that when Archie went darker, more real world, I didn't follow any of those comics, but Nick, did Sabrina also take a darker turn in the comics when Archie did?
Originally it was darker, yeah.
Even before Archie went dark, Sabrina was always kind of its own thing. So far, guys, on Netflix, we've got the first 10 episodes bingeable right now. Something unique and interesting that I'm kind of like, I got to tell you guys, I'm just going to tell you my feelings, and then I'll break it down a little bit more. I am obsessed with this take on Sabrina. Kiernan Shipka, the actress cast in the role as Sabrina Spellman, does a phenomenal job of playing a bewildered, innocent teenager, not fully understanding her witch heritage and being seemingly forever bound to her human world self with her friends and her best friends. Sorry, let me get these out here real quick. Her best friends, Susie Putnam and Rosalind Walker, are the characters played by Susie was played by Lachlan Watson, and Jazz Sinclair played Rosalind. They're kind of younger, up-and-coming actors in this. And then, of course, the boyfriend, Harvey Kinkle, played by Ross Lynch in this. I would say, if anything, really paid homage to the original like nature of the kind-hearted, silly, kind of stumbling over life character that is Harvey, is played really well by Ross Lynch here. And then I've got to give props to the actresses that are playing Hilda Spellman and Zelda. Hilda is played by Lucy Davis, and Zelda is being played by Miranda Otto. Both these two are just so well-rounded. Like, you guys all know, I know this isn't the actress's name, but anyone who knows the British actress who usually goes by the name of Fat Amy, especially in the Pitch Perfect films, her character, kind of almost like a little whimsical, dim-witted nature, is how Lucy Davis plays Hilda, at least in the first half of the season. And then Zelda is very cold-hearted, almost a straight-up bitch of an aunt towards Sabrina at the beginning. But then as the story progresses, as events unfold, it goes from Sabrina rejecting the idea of becoming a witch, and then everyone in the witching world trying to kind of come against her and condemn her for being a half-breed, eventually blooms into a crazy, chaotic last half of the season that results in the iconic image of Sabrina that we all know and love today. But there is a foreboding, uncertain sassiness to what she becomes at the end of this season that leaves the audience wondering, man, what are we in for with season two? Because, and I don't, again, this isn't a spoiler cast. I don't want to give it away to anyone that hasn't watched this. All I can say is the jump scares there's not really a lot of jump scares, but it does have some well-placed, creepy horror movie tropes that are welcome. They're not misplaced. There's a creepiness to it, and there's a whimsical lightheartedness to it, and every episode has a good mix of both. And once you get into episode 2 and beyond, you won't want to stop.
I like they chose Michelle Gomez. Mrs. Satan.
Yes. I don't want to expand upon that. You calling her Mrs. Satan kind of lets people who have never seen it a little into the plot past, because I don't know when you discovered that, but it becomes very well known by the final episode. But she's kind of left a mystery throughout, because basically this girl possesses one of the teachers who was known as Mary Wardwell. And throughout the season, she's kind of misleading Sabrina down a dark path.
Well, yeah, you kind of get a hint of her darker means within the first episode.
Oh, no, sure. It's just, I don't know. That's just, as a side note, Nick, you calling her Mrs. Satan, that's not actually what she is, but that's very revealing when you get to the end. And I don't know how much you know other than you're just assuming she's the woman of darkness. When you call her Miss Satan, I don't know if you're being literal or you're just figuratively describing her because she's so dark.
No, I assume she's actually a character from the comic books, Madam Satan.
Oh. See, you've got some comic background, and I didn't know how true the show was being to that. So, based on that detail, I really look forward to seeing you finish this season at some point and coming back and telling me how much matched up with it, because you've got the High Priest, the Dark Lord, and a bunch of characters from the School of Unseen Arts. There's just a lot of different characters in here that were never in, as far as I can tell, were never in Sabrina the Teenage Witch. Mm-hmm. So I'd be very curious to have you watch it and tell and like kind of share with me what characters were spot on with the comic book. But Nick, I'm going to give this my my official rating, and I don't give this very often. If you've listened to any of the previous episodes where I was rating The Arrow, and I don't know how shocked you were by my ratings on those, but I don't give things close to a 10 very often. I give season one of Sabrina a solid 10.
Nice.
I will rewatch this without question. The thing is when I give a 10 out of 10 to something, that to me means it's something that I would rewatch without even thinking about it. And I fell in love with this show that much that I will rewatch this. That being said, I'm going to throw it back to you real quick to just kind of shake things up a minute. Looks like in our notes, you've watched more of 9-1-1 as we previously talked about.
Yeah, season two hit.
How far into that are you?
I'm caught up to current. We just watched the newest one today.
Ooh, and it's still is it still procedural from kind of episode to episode? Are they? But is there an over arc, or are they kind of wrapped up individually? There
is
an overarching
story. They have some things going on, but it is episodic. Of course. Like right now, this last episode, it was actually a full backstory of Henrietta. And that's what the whole entire episode was.
Okay.
So.
And I'm drawing a complete blank. What was the actress that we were like wondering if we'd ever see her in it?
Jennifer Love Hewitt?
Jennifer Love Hewitt. Yeah, so she's credited as being in the first season, but I watched the pilot, dude, and I couldn't find her there. And you don't recall her
until the second season, first episode. She's Buck's sister.
Okay, but and does she man the 911 phone lines at all?
Did you watch the first season all the way through?
No, not completely, but I got the idea just from reading up on it that her character was involved with running some of that. Maybe, maybe not. Well,
another character leaves, not going to say the name.
Okay.
And she moves there and gets a job working there at 911 and is a 911 operator. She's one of the narrator voices and kind of the driving voice behind it.
Oh, okay. Okay. Nice. All right. Yeah. I like that a lot.
But she was not in the whole first season at all.
I know. It's so baffling. Like, IMDb, fix your credits, man. Because I couldn't see it anywhere either. It's weird. But it's still keeping you going. Are you watching this alone, or are you watching this as a thing you watch with your wife?
This, The Rookie, and The Resident are ones me and my wife are watching currently.
Okay, and on a side note, you put that in the notes too. How far are you in The Resident? Because I watched the current. First... Well, I don't know how far current is. Because I've watched the first two or three episodes, and I liked them a lot.
I think it's only one season, and... No, it's two seasons. And we're a few episodes in now.
Oh, it's a 2018 series. It's got season one went all the way to May 14th of this year with 14 episodes, and season two is currently sitting at episode 9, November 26th, which hasn't happened yet.
November, yeah, well, we just the one that just came and went is Heart in a Box,
episode 8, season 2.
Yeah, that's the one we just watched.
Okay. Dang. What was your overall opinion and rating of season one of that show, The Resident?
It was very tense. I liked the way it was put together. It kind of reminded me of a lot of the medical procedure shows, but they kind of gave it some sinisterness overarching of it for the sheer fact just all the crap hospitals get away with, in that it's more politics than actual medicine.
I know it's horrible, dude. Even in the early first season, I watched a few episodes with my wife, and I just kept seeing scenarios coming up where they're taking, like, the less damaging route, like whatever, you know, they take the routes that are going to get the hospitals are going to get in the least amount of trouble doing, or what's going to be most profitable in the end.
Yeah.
And it's pretty disgusting, man. We'll have to recap at the end of those seasons and see how you felt about them. Last show on the list tonight, guys, I'm going to jump in here and just kind of cap the night off with my thoughts on the Netflix original series, The Haunting of Hill House. This is the first season and the first show, in my opinion, the first of its kind. Now, I know it's looked at as a horror thriller, but if you dive in a little deeper, this is a crazy hybrid of a family drama with horror elements sprinkled all over it. Just like all over it. Like you accidentally spilled the canister of sprinkles and it kind of covered the whole painting. It's not like driven completely by the horror, but it's really close to a 50-50 split. And that's where that's where this show gets interesting. I'll give you guys the synopsis. It's 10 episodes long. Just came out this year on Netflix. Flashing between past and present, a fractured family confronts haunting memories of their old home and the terrifying events that drove them from it. Now, man, even into the later half of the season, this is a show you need to pay attention to when watching. For right up front, I'll tell you, I was thoroughly surprised at how good this show was, and I thoroughly enjoyed it all the way to the end. Now, with that context, I will say you guys are going to have to pay attention as you're watching it. It's not one of those horror flicks that you can kind of put on in the background and get distracted by kids or family life or whatever. If you look away for a few minutes, you're going to be very lost about what time or context is happening in the scene. Because what the show does, like the description, it bounces back and forth throughout every episode, contrasting what this family and these characters are doing in the present day and something in their past when they were little kids in this house that affected them. There's constant contrasting here. So when you see one of the characters dealing with something, usually a few seconds later, you're going to get a flashback of something that happened in their childhood in this home that the show is centered around, that's going to give you a little more insight. Every episode, every part of every episode gives you a little more and a little more through these flashbacks, to where by the final episode of the season, suddenly everything unfolds and you get the entire picture of what the family went through and what happened 20 plus years ago at this haunted house that led them to where they're at now, which is kind of a mildly dysfunctional, slightly broken family because of what happened in this house. And all of that unfolds. So there's the family drama between the siblings, and there's the horror elements where in the flashbacks as kids, we get to see the things that haunted the kids. And we get to see glimpses of some of these things continuing to affect them as adults later on. Now, the thing about this show, as far as the spooky aspect of it, the show is genuinely terrifying on a creepy level. This isn't This isn't a slasher film. This isn't the movie It, where there's a handful of jump scares. This, I gotta say, out of all 10 episodes, 10 hours of this show, there was only, to my recollection, one jump scare in the entire show that could actually be considered a jump scare. The rest of these hauntings and the spooky aspect of this show is subtle and unsettling. I mean, truly unsettling. And don't worry, you guys that are sensitive about things happening to kids, I will give you some reassurance that nothing physically horrific happens to any of the kids. But what they go through is horrific in the stuff that the kids see. So
this is like American Horror Story style stuff, like the first season?
Kind of, but no one is ever at the beginning of the season, no one is actually touched by any of the haunting stuff. It's just, I'll describe one scene. So one scene that doesn't give away anything, it's just an example of what kind of level the creepy things do. So there is a brother and sister that are twins. They're both around the age of 4 or 5 years old. I would say maybe younger than 5. They're real sweet kids, real innocent. They're twins. They have kind of that twin bond. And the sister always sees this female apparition standing in the room near her bed, looking at her, and she's got this uncomfortably tilted neck like this. Guys on YouTube can see me. Like her body is rigid, but her head is tilted to the side. And the girl is always telling her parents about her, and she calls her the bent neck lady. That is that itself, just the way the girl calls her that, and the way this apparition of the bent neck lady looks is just chilling throughout the show. The second character that deals with hauntings is the little boy, the twin boy who sleeps in the same room with his sister in his own bed, keeps getting visited each night by a levitating man in a suit with a top hat and a cane. This man in a suit is very tall and rigid, very straight. His head is slightly tilted down. He wears a top hat. He has a cane, and he taps the cane on the floor, but he's levitating half a foot off the floor, so his feet never touch the floor. And he floats in the hallways and comes into the room. And in this one scene, this boy is hiding under his bed. And so the camera angle is under the bed with the boy, and we see this levitating man with his cane come in, and you see his feet floating above the ground and the cane tapping on the floor. That's all the more I'll say about the stuff that's haunting these characters in the show. But the top hat guy and the bent neck lady just gave me freaking chills, dude. Like, I was uncomfortable walking in my house in the dark after I was done watching this show. I have never watched a horror show or movie do such a good job of giving me the physical creeps. And it wasn't jump scares. It was just the presentation of these things haunting these kids that just left a lingering, uneasy feeling in my body. So, for horror and drama, the only it's not even a nitpick, it's just kind of a surprise. And I won't say what it is, because I highly recommend you guys watch this. The ending of the show was not something I expected coming out of a horror movie. Okay? So, like, if you go into a horror movie or show and you have an idea of how most horror movies end, this one does not end anything like a normal horror movie does. And a lot of that, I think, can be contributed to the fact that it's a hybrid of horror and family drama that gives it this interesting, very different ending. But aside from the ending being unexpected, I know I said I usually give 10 out of 10s to things I'm willing to rewatch. I'm going to give this one a 10, not on the merits that it's something I want to rewatch, because I will probably never rewatch that season because of how creepy it was. But I give it a 10 for its fantastical ability to deliver a quality story and still give me the creeps.
Nice.
I highly recommend, if you like scary stuff, at least try the show out and watch it one. You don't have to ever rewatch it, but give the pilot episode a try. If you like scary stuff and you want to see something different that I haven't seen really done before, check The Haunting of Hill House out on Netflix. Whew. Anyway, guys, that's kind of all we had. Nick, did you have any comments you wanted to make on that review, or just?
I haven't seen it yet, so I don't know. I've seen it scroll across my Netflix every once in a while. I just haven't gotten to give it a chance yet.
Yeah, this one took me a little while to get through because it's something I wanted. Me and my wife chose we'd watch together, so we knocked out an episode, sometimes two episodes on the weekend, and so it took us a few weeks to get through the whole show. But it was enjoyable to do so, and by the halfway point, we wanted to just keep going because the episode started ending in ways that were like kind of cliffhanger. We're like, oh, now we need to know what happens next. You know, what happens next to the family? Like, something was revealed. Now what? Now what's next? That's kind of where we were taken with that. Anywho. Well, guys, we gave you the news. We gave you some reviews. It's time to wrap this shindig up for TV Talk this week. Just a quick reminder, guys. Even though this is a podcast, we still read our feedback wherever you guys put it. So feel free to leave a comment down below on the YouTubes and tell us if you guys have seen these shows too and what you guys think about them. Did you like them? Did you dislike them? Let us know. You can hit us up across all social media, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, all at Nerdentials. And if you guys aren't sure where to find all this stuff, if you forget everything else, walk away with this. Go to nerdentialsmedia.com. Links down below. And if you're looking for some nerds to chat with and geek out with over the coming days, jump down in the link below that's with that link called the Discord. Go hop in our Discord, guys. A few of our listeners have joined us and added to the numbers of Nerdy Chat, and you guys should too. Well, Nick, I think it's time to call it a night.
I would agree.
That being said, nerds, for me, myself, and I, Nick, himself, and him, this has been your Nerdy Essentials. And as always, nerds, we'll see you
on the other side.
No, you just f***ed it up purposely.
We'll see you on the other side.
On the other side. Ah, see, I tried. Yeah.
I give you the 1 second break and you didn't follow.
I tried. I understand your struggle now, sir.